Hey, Tom here. Welcome to the Hack Podcast. A photo of an AFL player kicking an epic goal has caused a massive backlash. Why would a photo of someone kicking a football cause a backlash? Well, it's because the player is a woman.
And I saw the comments. I know I shouldn't read them, but it's hard not to.
Yep, that is Taylor Harris. She plays for Carlton. More on that story in just a moment. Plus, can state elections actually be interesting for young people? We'll hit that in a moment too. First, would you go to Gallipoli for Anzac Day now that the Turkish president has said this?
The country's president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, declared Australians visiting Gallipoli with anti-Muslim sentiments would return in coffins like their grandparents.
On Triple J.
Yeah, they're pretty shocking comments. And thousands of Australians are planning to go there next month. If you're one of them, I'd love to hear from you. Give me a call, 1300 055 36. Have his comments turned you off? Well, here's Stephen Stockwell explaining exactly what the Turkish president has said and how our leaders and tour companies are reacting.
Right now, Turkey's in the middle of an election campaign, and at a recent speech, the president Recep Tayyip Erdogan said his country was being tested. He reminded us that the Anzacs at Gallipoli came back in coffins, and if Australians or New Zealanders went over with the same intentions now, we could come back the same way. He says the Christchurch attack is evidence of global anti-Muslim sentiment. He's been reading from the shooter's manifesto at rallies and also playing the video.
I understand the deep offence Australians would be feeling about this. It is truly upsetting.
Our Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, isn't having a bar of the statements being made by the Turkish Prime Minister.
They are offensive because they insult the memory of our Anzacs and they violate the pledge that is etched in the stone at Gallipoli of the promise of Ataturk to the mothers of our Anzacs.
That promise is attributed to Turkey's first president, who took power after the First World War, and it says the Australian and New Zealand soldiers who died there are lying in the soil of a friendly country, and that they become Turkey's sons as well. Our PM is pissed because he feels like the current Turkish president hasn't recognised how the Christchurch attack has been condemned in Australia and New Zealand.
It has not just been our condemnation of that attack, but it has been our response, both as countries who have an open, tolerant society, that we have reached out to embrace our Muslim brothers and sisters.
The comments from the Turkish president come just a month before Anzac Day commemorations at Gallipoli in Turkey. Our PM wouldn't go as far to say that people should put their plans on hold, but he does want any travellers to keep their wits about them.
I think they should exercise caution, but they should await further official advice.
The Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, or DFAT, says anyone heading to Turkey should exercise a high degree of caution, but the Prime Minister says they're reviewing that advice.
The safety of our travellers is always our first priority.
In a statement to Hack, Intrepid Tours says they're keeping a close eye on the travel advisories.
It's too soon to comment on any changes to our Anzac Day trips. However, our local operations team in Turkey will be working closely with official organisers of the Anzac commemorations, including with DFAT and the Australian Embassy.
TripAdvisor wouldn't comment, while tour company Fanatics didn't seem that worried.
Each year, there always seems to be an issue brought up on the eve of the Gallipoli ceremonies. But we are in close contact with DFAT and we expect our tours to go ahead without any issues.
Hack, Triple J.
Stephen Stockwell reporting. Love to hear from you if you're planning to go to Anzac Day at Gallipoli in Turkey. Give me a call, 1300 055 36. That was a statement from the tour company Fanatics. They're still going. Be interesting to hear if any other tour companies change their plans and if the advice from Smart Traveller changes as well. Stephen Stockwell, the reporter. Will, you're planning on going. How are you feeling after hearing those comments from the Turkish president?
Yes, we're going to go in about October. I'm actually pretty excited for it.
Right, okay. So you're not going for Anzac Day, you're going later in the year.
Yeah. No, yeah, we are.
What did you make of those comments from the Turkish president?
It's incredibly sad, in my opinion. Violence, one side creates violence and the other one does, and it's just incredibly sad that we're just going to go in an endless circle of hate.
Yeah. Does it make you worried about going to Turkey, or do you think these are just empty words in an election campaign?
I hope it's only empty words. I'm not worried about safety-wise. I'm more worried about what they'll do with the visas if they go any further.
Yeah, right. Interesting. All right. Thanks for the call, Will.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Jacinta Carroll is the Director of Security Policy at the National Security College at the ANU. Let's find out what the real threat is here. Jacinta Carroll, what do you think? Do you think these are just empty words from a president desperate to be elected in a in the upcoming Turkish election, or should we be worried about, you know, our fellow Australians turning up to Gallipoli in April?
Yeah, look, great question and a very concerning development. And really, both of the options that you said are real things that we should be concerned about. One is that it seems very clear that Erdogan was speaking to a domestic audience, and this is what we hear is the excuse that the Turkish ambassador gave reportedly when he was summoned by the Prime Minister to explain what was going on. I think we all know that leaders of countries speak to their domestic audience and try to beat up threats from outside to solidify their own base. That's normal. They do have to remember the impact that their words have elsewhere. And really, after we see the impact of Christchurch and the way New Zealand and Australia reacted to that, his comments really go counter to it. No one else has said that there's divisions. No one else has said that this is a massive attack on Muslims, so it's not helpful. That said, the travel advisory that you've talked about is what we all should be looking at if we're thinking of going to Turkey. It does say exercise a high degree of caution. That's level two of a four-level advisory, and that goes a bit higher into if you're thinking of going into eastern Turkey or down near the Syrian border. It says really reconsider your travel. You need to travel, and if you're thinking of going near the conflict zone of Syria, just don't go there. So it is a place to be concerned about, and there are issues for any Westerners in a country that does experience terrorist attacks in Istanbul and in Ankara. We know that Westerners are targeted. And also, probably a bit more concerning, particularly in light of Erdogan's comments, are this encroaching authoritarian nature, it would appear, of the government. I think that this is a good opportunity to sort of calm things down amongst the local populace. In terms of Australians going there, look, there are specific travel advisories brought out just for Anzac Day for anyone who's thinking of going out there.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on those. I want to ask you a question about that. Do you think these comments from the president could whip up anti-Western sentiment and encourage a terror attack on Australians at Gallipoli? And has there ever been attacks on Westerners at those services?
Yeah. Look, there's always concern, and there's a threat concern from anyone who is a terrorist supporter. The Turks are concerned about this because they actually experience a lot of terrorist attacks in their own country, mostly against the government and against some other minorities. But what we've seen is that usually the Turkish government works really closely with the Australian government to ensure that there is security, firstly at Anzac Day for commemorations, but also that's done in a way to make sure that people can enjoy being there, can respect the reverence of the site. And look, many Australians would know this who've been there, that, or even been to the Turkish Memorial in Canberra, that Kemal Atatürk, the founder of the modern Turkish country, really has said himself, and it's set in stone in both of these locations, that those Australians who fought there are the brothers of Turks.
Yeah, it's one of the most beautiful statements
ever.
Aberration. And that's what's, so sad about hearing this from the current president, who clearly isn't in the same headspace that Atatürk was in. Lachlan, you were there in 2016. What was it like, and what's your reaction to the Turkish president's recent comments?
I think I'm pretty silly, but look, I was actually 2015 for the 100 years, which was the big one, and it was incredibly moving. But there was all this talk about the fact that there might be attacks and things like that with the 100 years, because there was 11,000 of us there. But regardless, the security was airtight. The Turkish special forces were there. They were hiding in the bushes when we were walking past up to go to Lone Pine.
So you felt pretty secure?
Yes, very secure. Yes, it was crammed in there like sardines, but it was remarkable and moving, and I would 100% go.
Yeah, totally. All right. Well, great to hear that encouragement. Be interesting to hear how people react in the coming days with their plans to go there in April. Thank you so much for joining us there. And Jacinta Carroll from the ANU, thank you so much as well.
Yeah, thanks. And I would say I think Turkish Australians would be very disappointed to hear what the president is saying. And every Australian who's been to Turkey just knows how welcoming the people are. So let's get the politics out of this.
Totally. Thanks for the joining us there, Jacinta from the ANU. On the text line, someone talking about Scott Morrison's reaction to Tayyip Erdogan. Thanks a dog whistler to know a dog whistler. Thanks, ScoMo. Liam in Geelong, you say, I think everyone is forgetting the part where the Turkish president has said it's about those who are anti-Muslim. Pretty simple. Don't be an Islamophobe. Another listener says, Scott Morrison has been promoting nationalism and anti-Muslim sentiments for years. Should hardly be a surprise when another country does the same back. All right, you're listening to Triple J's Hack Program. In a moment, we are going to talk about that very controversial AFL photo. Someone kicking a ball, how could that be controversial? It's all about Taylor Harris. You'll find about that in just a moment.
As New South Wales gears up for the state election this weekend, analysts are predicting young voters hold the power to choose the next government.
On Triple J.
Okay, so which state are you in? Can you name your premier? All right, maybe you can. Can you name your state opposition leader? Now, if you don't know, don't worry, you're probably not alone. State politics can be a bit of a snooze fest for young people. They're often fought over infrastructure. Well, this Saturday's election in New South Wales is different because young voters could swing the result. Here's Avni Dyers explaining why.
Interested in voting for the Voluntary Euthanasia Party, just in the upper house.
Liberal for Sydney.
Vote to end animal cruelty. Thank you.
I'm at one of the early voting stations for the New South Wales election at Sydney's Town Hall. There are signs for every single party, every single candidate on either side. There's colours everywhere. How are you feeling about the New South Wales election coming up this week? Have you thought much about it?
Look, I'm not really optimistic about any kind of politics at the moment.
Yeah, I voted for the first time last year and I don't really know much about politics, I guess.
So I don't really have a particular side I want to go for, but I'm pretty environmental as well.
I was kind of zoned out, yeah.
Okay, so state elections usually just pop up, you vote because you have to and get your sausage sizzle, and you may not know heaps about what's going on. But this year, the New South Wales election is really interesting because young people have a lot of power.
I think it's going to be massive because young people are the swing vote. They are not rusted into old school politics. They are action-based and issues-focused. And under 35s are about 25% of the voting bloc.
This is Katie Atchison from Youth Action New South Wales, and she's been speaking to young people around the country about what they care about in the lead-up to the election. The New South Wales Electoral Commission's figures show there are 1.34 million voters aged between 18 and 35 for this election, and that's a record high of young enrolments in the state.
Many young people are enrolling to vote, and we saw like 140,000 more young people just in the last 2 years.
Love has had a landslide victory. Congratulations!
More young people just in the last 2 years enrolling to vote because of things like the postal vote, where they were really frustrated with the federal government.
Yeah, only 7% of Triple J listeners under 30 in the What's Up in Your World survey said they were confident that politicians are working in the best interests of young people. And when it comes to the New South Wales election, there have been a few issues which have really pushed young people to take action.
Do not kill our music!
The first has been what many are calling a crackdown on music festivals after 5 young drug deaths at those events in 5 months. The New South Wales Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, announced a raft of new measures, including a new licensing regime, which festivals have said will destroy the industry.
Well, look, I don't think it's fair for organisers to blame anybody but themselves.
In fact, heaps of major and smaller festivals, along with bands, have been campaigning against Gladys Berejiklian and the Liberals. And these are groups which usually don't get political. This is what Splendour and Fools have been saying on their Facebook pages.
The New South Wales Liberal Party plan to restrict, heavily regulate and kill live music events. Make your vote count on March 23. Support the parties who work with, not against, our live music industry, and help protect your favourite festivals.
But the Liberals aren't the only party who've annoyed young voters.
Our young children will flee, and who are they being replaced with? They're being replaced by young children, young people from typically Asia with PhDs.
Labor leader Michael Daly had to apologise after a leaked video showed him saying young people's jobs are being taken by foreigners.
It's always baffled me, I have to say, as to why the political parties still don't seem to appreciate the importance of this cohort of voters.
Eric Sidoti is from the Western Sydney University, and he's spent years researching the importance of young voters. He says for the past 10 years or so, despite what we might think, voters like you and me have been really important. People over 50 generally stick to one party, whereas young people usually change their vote depending on issues. And Eric says it's bizarre politicians don't focus on swaying young voters.
Young people are clearly the swing voters, and in an election like this, it will be won and lost on that vote. So all you need to do is win over the young people's vote in those marginal seats, and you will almost guarantee that you're going to win.
And the myth that young people don't care about politics has been debunked, according to these guys. Young people just care about actual issues as opposed to politicians. So, with the polls projecting a deadlock in New South Wales, experts reckon the parties should be focusing on the issues that matter to young people.
And so what we need to see in this last week is some real commitment to issues that young people care about, and young people just want action. Like, move forward, help us lead the country, and if you're not going to, get out of the way, because we'll do it.
Hack on Triple J.
Strong words there from Katie Archison from Youth Action New South Wales, ending that story from Avni Dias on the text line. Yep, I'm 25 and never enrolled until the marriage equality plebiscite. Can't wait to vote out the Liberals. Us young people are going to shake up this election. Ray in Sydney. Beck, also in New South Wales. My husband and I are under 25. We've noticed the issues we care aren't always focused on, so we decided to do some research because it's our responsibility. We have to take our civil duty seriously. I'd love to hear your reaction. Are you voting in the New South Wales election for the first time? Has New South Wales politics finally got your attention on the text line? Man, Gladys must be sweating up a storm realising how many of us young people actually care this year. Well, let's find out how much young people will influence this election in New South Wales, and also how this New South Wales election will influence the federal election in May. Bridget Glanville is a veteran New South Wales political reporter. She works for ABC News. Bridget, thanks so much for joining us. It's likely to be so close that it will be a minority government. Who do you think is going to come out on top?
Well, that's like calling it before it's happened, Tom. I certainly can't do that. I actually have no idea.
Somewhere, really. But pretty close.
Yeah, pretty close. It's 50-50. I think all that's, you know, a lot of people saying that, you know, there might be a hung parliament, but really, you know, when it's 50-50, it's anyone's game. So in New South Wales, the government only needs to lose 6 seats for it to slip into, you know, a hung parliament into minority government. And quite a few of those seats are in regional New South Wales that they're looking at, and the others are in Sydney. The Labor opposition to win minority government needs to pick up about 8 or 9. So, you know, there's only a couple of seats different there. So it's a chance for both of them.
Obviously, Triple J is a predominantly music station, except for this excellent half hour of current affairs. So we've been closely following the New South Wales government's decisions and rhetoric on festivals, pill testing, and their history on lockouts and basically their impact on the culture in New South Wales. And those issues have brought thousands of people out onto the streets to protest, probably for lots of them, their first political protest ever. Do you think this is going to do much damage to the New South Wales government? Are they very worried about these issues?
I think if people vote, yes, it will do damage. So, you know, we heard a couple of people there saying, I haven't enrolled till I was 25. Mm. So the issue is to engage. But we do see that young people are far more engaged. Look at the climate change rallies that you've seen from teenage kids right around the world. So people are engaged, and climate change is now an issue at a state election. That's always been an issue for the federal election. I've had ministers say to me, Tom, do you think that anyone under the age of 30 is going to vote for us because of pill testing, because of the situation with lockout laws and the ramifications that had on the live music scene, that kind of thing. So there's big issues for the government, and it will hurt them, I'd imagine, you know, depending on if people vote and obviously how they vote.
Have they only just realised that, though, because they haven't come out with any policies that sort of would appeal to voters who are angry about those issues?
Well, I think obviously they're, you know, the lockout laws, so the government's argument was that about that. And the government's always been about appealing to the parents. You know, like education stories are all about, obviously about appealing to the kids in them, largely because they can't vote. But the lockout laws were appealing to the parents of young people who are on the streets. That's, you know, and we saw the government relax some of those lockout laws, but it hasn't. And it's probably hurt them in, you know, who knows? We had the Wentworth by-election. Did it hurt them there? We know that Alex Greenwich is an independent in Sydney and he's been very strong on trying to get on concerns of what lockout laws have done. But whether or not we see more change, I think that's the only real way, until they actually see voters voting against that, I don't know if they really think the change is going to be significant.
You're listening to Triple J's Hack Program. That's the voice of Bridget Glanville. She's a veteran New South Wales politics reporter.
Can you please stop calling me veteran?
She's just been doing it a long time and she's very good at it. That's what I'm saying.
I do remember being here about 20 years ago thinking, you know, it's like work experience.
Well, look at you now.
There you go.
Plenty of texts coming in. Alicia in Sydney says, I'm 19 and I only enrolled to vote after attending the climate strike. 150,000 people attended all around Australia. It restored my faith in our ability to impact the government. Another listener says, the Liberal Party has done a great job on infrastructure and public spending. However, their total inability to see the destruction of Sydney's nighttime economy and music festivals has turned me right off. First-time non-Liberal voter. Another texter says, no more lockout. So that's resonating for a lot of Triple J listeners. The other reason this state election is more interesting than usual state elections is that it's so close to a federal election, which will be in May. What impact do you think it's going to have on the federal election?
Well, certainly if you look at the federal election, a lot of the seats that they need to win federally are in Queensland, in marginal seats in Queensland and in Western Sydney. I think there's something like more seats in Western Sydney than there are anywhere else in the same area than there are anywhere else in the country. And there's a number of marginal seats in Western Sydney. Certainly this election, less so than other state elections as the focus on Western Sydney, but it still is. So the seat of Penrith, for example, which is the state seat of Penrith, that's in the federal seat of Lindsay. And the Lindsay federal seat is held by Labor, by Emma Hussar, and Labor's hoping to retain that. But in Penrith, in the state seat, it's held by a Liberal. And it's only held with a margin of about 7%. It's not as tight as other seats, but that's a real battleground seat. So for the similar reasons of issues for the federal election, it is also the same for the state election.
So does it work that if the Liberals get smashed at this state election, then that rolls on to the federal election, they also cop it there, reflecting a deeper ongoing sentiment? Or does it go the other way where we've got Labor in New South Wales now, maybe we shouldn't vote out the coalition in the federal parliament?
So the main issue for the New South Wales government being so close to the federal government election is that the polls in the federal government, we know, are well and truly stacked towards Bill Shorten. So it's, you know, if the polls are right, Scott Morrison won't be in government. So with the unpopularity of the federal government, how that impacts on New South Wales is the Liberal Party in New South Wales is worried that people go to the polls and then they go, we don't like the Liberals, and they vote the New South Wales Liberals out without really thinking about the difference between the two. But in New South Wales, Gladys Berejiklian, while the polls are tight, she's much more popular than Scott Morrison is. So she doesn't really want the federal Liberals around. Like, basically, in New South Wales, they would have liked the federal people to have gone to an election by now so voters can vent their anger out on the federal Liberals and not take their anger out on New South Wales.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Bridget, on the text line. Funny how it takes a threat of no music festivals for young people to get involved. Never mind the environment or education. What do you mean? Splendor might be cancelled?
I saw the comments. I know I shouldn't read them, but it's hard not to. Triple J.
That's the voice of an AFL women's player. A very good one. Her name's Taylor Harris and she plays for Carlton. And an amazing photo of her kicking a goal has caused a huge reaction online. Channel 7 posted the photo of her on their 7AFL Facebook account, but they took it down because it attracted offensive comments. Here's what Taylor had to say about it.
The comments that I saw were sexual abuse. It was repulsive and it made me uncomfortable. So this needs to, whether it's Victoria Police, whatever it is, contact these people or some sort of warning, Facebook delete them, something needs to happen, because we can talk about it as much as we want, but they're not listening and they're probably smiling about it.
That's Taylor Harris there. Now, Seven's decision to tank the picture down rather than just delete all the horrible comments has caused a massive backlash because it meant the trolls won and women's sport lost. So Channel 7 apologised last night. They said, We're sorry. Removing the photos sent the wrong message. Many of the comments made on the post were reprehensible and we'll work harder to ban trolls from our pages. Now, it's created a lot of heat, a lot of media commentary today. Here are some of the reactions from the bosses of the AFLW and AFL.
Well, the traffic that was around that photo that was posted did attract a lot of commentary. That wasn't appropriate in this day and age.
In the end, it's an amazing photo, and that's the overwhelming consensus, I feel, is that's what people see.
What I saw was an amazing football player in full flight, and what resulted at the back end of that kick was a goal from 45 metres. It just happens that this was a female football player.
I think there needs to be more accountability with people that do have accounts, and you should be, you know, somewhat have a profile almost attached to your driver's licence, I think, because there's a lot of trolls that get away with things and it shouldn't be allowed.
She's a star AFLW player. There's unacceptable commentary and people are holding those comments to account, and I think that's really pleasing.
Triple J.
That's Gillon McLachlan, the CEO of the AFL. Before that, you heard Aaron Phillips, who plays for Adelaide, and the boss of the AFLW, Nicole Livingston. Loads of reaction to that on the Hack on Triple J Facebook thread. And make sure you follow us on Facebook so you get all our updates. Craig says, if this horrific abuse surprised anyone, just take a trip down the comments section on any Channel 7, 9 or 10 article. It's a daunting task, but if we convince those commenters to be better people, we can improve as a society. Lucille, you say, why do people feel the need to degrade others on social media? Do they do it in real life? I highly doubt it. Absolutely pathetic. Love to hear your reaction to this story. Maybe you work as a social media moderator, or at least it's part of your job. Love to hear from you. Do you get enough support? 1300 055 36. Jennifer Beckett was a moderator for ABC, and she now lectures in media and communications at the Uni of Melbourne. Jennifer, do you think we've learned anything from this story?
I think part of what we might have learned from this story is one, a lesson I think we've been learning for a while, that misogyny and hate speech and abuse runs rampant on social media.
Yep.
But we've probably also learned a little bit of a lesson in good crisis response to when things go wrong in social media, and what's a good governance practice around moderation and what might be a bad governance practice.
Well, it seems like what we learn is that if you basically back away from the moderation, then in some cases the trolls, the people with the bad intentions, end up winning.
Yeah, absolutely. It can certainly feel like that. As somebody who has worked in this space before, and also as somebody who did it as part of a job, so it's part of being a community manager, thinking about that is a really important thing to think about when you make a decision about whether or not you're going to take down a post. So there are better ways to do it than simply going, oh my gosh, it's all too much, and just removing the post because it's getting a lot of negative commentary.
What was it like for you personally working as a moderator at the ABC? How hard was the job?
The job is a lot harder than people think. You don't have a lot of time to make decisions often. And when a post such as the one with Taylor Harris's picture gets absolutely bombarded by people who have clearly organised to do this, the task can become daunting. And not only is it daunting in the scope of it, it's daunting in the fact that you're the person who's sitting there having to read everything so you can make those decisions, whilst also getting kickback from the other members of your community who are abusing you for not taking the stuff down fast enough.
It's so hard. Bridget from Castlemaine, you monitor a Facebook page with 10,000 members. What's it like?
It is really, really hard. Like, I could sit on there all day, 12 hours a day, 15 hours a day, 24 hours a day, and there is just always another troll waiting to come at me that needs to be deleted or silenced, or it's really hard to control. And there's no one there to help. Like, there's no Facebook members. There's no one above me to help out.
Yeah, it's horrible. Thanks for the call, Bridget. Very quickly to you, Jennifer. Do you think media organisations or any organisations that have a Facebook page are starting to wake up to the resourcing needed to properly moderate Facebook threads and other social media spaces?
I would absolutely hope that that is what is happening. I'm seeing that more and more people are thinking about it, but the one thing that I see is really lacking, and which Australian community managers would say is really lacking as well, is the lack of mental health support for moderators.
So yeah, it's so full on. I'm just going to have to cut you off there, unfortunately. Jennifer, very interesting to hear your insights there. We are out of time. Bridget Hussford, I know you'd like to weigh in on this one.
Well, let me just say, I got a membership to Carlton after what happened. Oh, Taylor, wow. It was an inspiration. So, yeah, I signed up.
Hack.
On Triple J.
All right, some interesting texts I'll read you before we end the podcast. I don't follow any sport, but I Googled Taylor and her kick photo. Wow, magical sportswomanship. What an athlete. Another listener said, Channel 7 need to be embarrassed by this, pulling the photo and not moderating the comments harms women in sport and reinforces the trolls. And they did acknowledge that. So I think they were embarrassed enough to make that apology and that acknowledgement. It's free speech. I don't agree with abuse, but if you can't handle something, look away or delete Facebook, snowflakes, which is a impractical and kind of a ridiculous statement, because why should trolls and people who use violent speech mean that other people can't enjoy social media? It's ridiculous. Noel from Hobart says, we need to understand who and what the trolls are. Investigation has shown that they are most often groups of middle-aged white men who feel emasculated. They tank out their anger by coordinating attacks against women online to get a reaction. Congrats, Channel 7. You gave them what they wanted. Just delete their comments. And as we heard, more resourcing is needed, I think, for moderators to be able to do a good job so that those forums actually work for the reasons they're supposed to. And in that case, it was to celebrate an incredible athlete. All right. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Catch you on the next one.